From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and even some days insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here I am with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hello, Rex. I'm so glad that you've invited me to participate once again on your show.
On my show.
But I did have quite a week, and I needed your advice, Rex.
Can I introduce our colleagues before
you
get carried away here? It's not just the Alan and Rex show, you know. This is really the Media Project. Right, absolutely. Barbara Lombardo is here, longtime editor of the Saratogian, now professor at the University of Albany. How you doing?
I'm very good, and I'm very happy to be here today.
Well, and we're glad to have you. And my wonderful colleague, Mike Spain, my retired colleague, the former associate editor of the Times Union. What do you say?
Well, still happy to be still engaged in the profession of journalism. I kept my license, you know.
We would never do anything, but thank you for doing it this time.
Don't you like twitch sometimes when you get up and you don't have to go to work, or does it feel really good?
That twitch kind of got softer and softer as the weeks went by.
This is a really good thing.
You'll see someday, Rex.
Someday. Even Alan will see someday.
No, I doubt it. Feet first. So I did want to ask you a question, Rexy, because I need your advice and I treasure your advice. I've often asked you for advice. You know that I have. As you know, the governor of New York has sort of rediscovered WAMC after 8 years.
Yes.
And I sometimes scratch my head. But the news people love it because they can cut it up, they can use it, you know, it's like a good piece of fish or meat. You could do that. So yesterday, at the end of the show, the governor had something to say to me, which was extraordinary, and I thought might be Eliezer Lipsky's famous novel, The Kiss of Death.
I tell you.
It's on the old movie channel every once in a while. So perhaps we could hear it, okay?
The reason I think your interviews are helpful to the communication process is you have history and you have knowledge and you have wisdom. And so much of the journalism today comes without context, comes without history, and comes without a depth of knowledge. You know, they think because I read it in a tweet, that's enough. I had a conversation with a reporter yesterday who wrote something and said, well, the governor says this. I said, yeah, but there are still facts. It's not that I said it. Do the research. Find out the facts. Find out the history. And we're losing that as a society in general. And you bring that. You are probative. You can be very annoying at times. But
Governor speaks
you
the truth.
Are a,
I try.
You are a great journalist. And that's why I talk to you.
Now, you see, Rex, I wanted your advice.
That was so beautiful.
Am I being set up here is the question.
My heart is thumping. Well, isn't that something? I mean, honestly, I think he probably was sincere, but are you being set up? Yes. Is he intending to? I mean, he clearly values you, but I think it's not untrue that you have history and context, because how do you say it? You're old.
That's right.
How it said?
I'm old.
You've been around for a long time.
In fact, I wrote a column this week in which I announced that I'm running for president. And I said, I'm 77. I apologize. If I was just a little older, I'd be a better candidate because everybody's doing that now. But honestly, for 8 years, the governor did not come on WMC. And then all of a sudden, you know, here he is. And we're getting some mail that says, this is great. We can watch history in the making. Quite a bit of mail, Mike has seen that. And we've seen some people who say, I like our panel in the morning. I don't want the governor on it. So, here you are, my senior advisor. I go to you for advice all the time. And it's
senior, except in the context of not being
much younger senior advisor.
Yes.
So what do you think?
Well, I think as long as you are alert to the fact that politicians play journalists, as long as you're not overly influenced by this and then shy away from the hard questions in an effort to keep him calling, you're fine. It's to your advantage that he wants to talk to you. But bear in mind, there was another person who was very much in the governor's favor when he first became governor.
Yeah, you're talking about Fred Dicker.
We are. Yeah.
Yes, and he went on his radio show all the time, and right. They had a very public dispute. It was always a question of who was going to bite who first.
Right.
And of course, Dicker not being a person who plays straight, frankly, it was not a surprise that he turned and suddenly started writing and saying all kinds of nasty stuff against the governor.
Well, I have to say, Rex, for whatever it's worth, for those people who listen to the show, I have been assiduous in asking the toughest questions I can possibly find, and maybe unfair questions, which is why he said I was a pain. But I would never give that up, and I, for whatever it's worth, either he rises to the occasion or he doesn't. Barbara, what do you think?
Well, when you mentioned that Alan was old, and you're alluding to that he's a veteran in the position, and you could say that somebody can have 50 years of experience, right, or they can have 50 years on the job, 1 year of experience 50 times. So that being on the job a long time doesn't necessarily make you a better journalist or anything else.
And by the way, I don't want to interrupt, but by the way, your son, who is a young man and who works for Rex now on the Times Union, is on the front page all the time. And he's not 77 years old. How old is he?
He is 31.
Wow.
31.
See? Now there it goes.
So I think that what was important to me in what the governor had to say to you was that you try to find the facts, that you're not just reporting the he said, she said, or the governor says this or that. Although what the governor has said to you on your show has then become news all over the state and beyond. So that's good. I would heed Rex's advice, which you already know anyway.
Of course.
Which is to take the flattery with a grain of salt.
Don't let it go to your head.
Excellent.
No, my general paranoia indicates that when something like that happens, you have to look into all the dusty corners to make sure what's going on. I think, by the way, it was very nice that he said it, but I don't take that all that seriously. But I do think he was after somebody else. And that's what that was all about.
Well, don't you think he can say that today? And if you say or report something in the near future or any time in the future that can be accurate, but that makes him angry, that Love Fest is going to be over.
Yeah.
Right, and you might as well exploit this opportunity, because what you're doing is, by interviewing him live, you're putting him on the spot before a huge audience of New Yorkers, taxpayers, and making him accountable. And at one point, if that becomes uncomfortable for him and he no longer comes on the show, so be it.
Yeah, and that will say something. That will make, if he decides to stop being here, there will be a reason for it. And that will in itself be interesting news. So,
but you guys are right. I mean, it has the potential for really being flatterizing. I know there's no such word.
There should be.
Be helpful.
Flatterizing. But on the other hand, you also have to, worry, as you have said, Mike, about what is it that will turn him off. I mean, I know that the day that we can't do this anymore will be because he got mad.
Yeah.
I'm sure that question has gone through the minds of countless journalists when they are faced with a source who, it's an important person, it's a good source, it's somebody they need for their stories, for background, for quotes on and off the record. And what do you do when there's something that's unfavorable? And in my experience in the past, it's usually this, oh my gosh, moment where you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah, one of the key things for a beat reporter is the ability to keep people talking to you after you've stung them. And this is a significant skill that is hard to learn. How do you keep writing straight, tough stories and yet keep going back day after day to the same town hall, state legislature? How do you do that? I would say that our investigations editor at the Times Union, Brendan Lyons, who is perhaps the best at this of anybody I've ever known, does it by being so straight with people that people are never surprised when they are hit with a Brendan Lyons investigation, because he will say to them, listen, this is going to look bad for you. Let me tell you what we're going to say in tomorrow's paper.
That technique is exactly the right thing to do, so that you're being upfront with the person, you're not pulling punches, but you're also not being a jerk about it. You're not taking glee in embarrassing them or hurting them. They're doing their job as they see it, you're doing your job as you need to.
Well, you know, there was a reporter around here, we've already mentioned him at least once, and people were scared to death of him. You know, yeah, he was going to beat you up, but, you know, if you didn't feed the tiger, maybe you were going to get it even worse.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different approach, and that's using, you know, perhaps even abusing the power of your media that you're reporting for. But there is a certain element of that exists. If a politician decides not to talk to you, it's at their peril.
Now, Andrew Cuomo's father, Mario, got mad at me. We had a show for a lot of years, way over a decade. And some days I would ask him a question, and he'd be furious and call me up in the middle of the night and yell at me and say, what'd you have to ask me that for, and do all of that. And then he'd disappear. The governor it was a weekly show. The governor isn't available. So one strike would be 1 week, you know, if it really were offensive, 2 weeks. But every once in a while, you got 3 weeks in which it really looked like he meant business. He wasn't coming back. That he wasn't coming back. However, he knew enough to come back. And what I would do is get Alphonse D'Amato on the air in the weeks that,
there you
the
go.
Weeks that he wasn't there. And he would come on. But there are some people who get so angry at reporters, they never will talk to that reporter again.
Yes. And that is actually to their disadvantage. We have a situation now where we have some local officials who are refusing to talk to any reporters, which I think is not appropriate behavior for public officials, but in particular to one of our reporters. And I keep trying to get across the point. You don't get good stories in the paper when you refuse to talk to people. You have to put your point of view out there. You have to tell people what's going on from your perspective if you're a public official. That's a little different from, you know, we need to talk about this thing. There's actually this amazing article that is sometimes pieces in the press are so influential that they make news. And one of those is Jane Mayer's story, Trump TV in The New Yorker, which is about the White House Fox News relationship. And it kind of goes to that because it is so different from, I think, what we're talking about in the context of you and the governor, or what I'm talking about in terms of a town or city hall that's having trouble with a local reporter. That is, there's this symbiotic relationship between the White House of Donald Trump and Fox News that is like nothing we've ever seen before. And I defer now to my colleague, Mr. Spain, who's the only person who's read this lengthy article in its entirety.
Well, you know, Jane Mayer is an incredible investigative reporter who writes for The New Yorker and other publications, and she uses a lot of research to make her points, and she quotes Media Matters, which is an organization that watches media, and they show that during the morning, President Trump, during his executive time, obviously is listening and watching Fox and Friends, because their assertions are followed time after time after time after time by his tweets, which reiterate the points that are made on Fox and Friends. But the big connection in this story that she talks about is Bill Shine, who took over the news at Fox News after Roger Ailes was pushed out after a sexual harassment scandal, is now the director of communications at the White House, and he's a deputy chief of staff. And he's still being paid by Fox, this severance package of a couple years, millions of dollars, $8 or something million. But it's coming gradually. So he's on Fox's payroll, sort of, but he's running the communications program at the White House also. And the woman, Hope Hicks, who he replaced at the White House, is over at Fox kind of organizing things over there. And it's like symbiotic relationship is exactly what it is. Even Roger Ailes was antsy about that, maybe out of a sense of fairness, but more likely out of a sense of perception. The perception is so bad that everybody who is not on board is terrified by it. But in the end, Fox and Sean Hannity, who is the major talent at Fox, they have access to the president. They say the president and Hannity talked most nights after Hannity's show. when the president went to the border in El Paso last month to underscore, or in January, to underscore the importance of the border protection and building a wall. Hannity was up on the stage hugging him and hugging Bill Shein and Hope Hicks. I mean, it's all one little click.
In light of that, do you think that it was appropriate for the Democratic National Committee to say, we're not going to allow Fox News to host a presidential debate with our candidates?
Well, there you go back to our previous discussion. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be above it. You have to be careful. But I think that there are people on Fox News that are trying to do it right. They quote former Fox people who say that they left in frustration because they see people trying to report the news accurately and fairly, but these nighttime commentators have sort of hijacked the network and they're out there to support it. But I think the Democrats make a big mistake if they don't face it.
Yeah.
There's another side to this, of course, and that is there are people who say to me, well, what about MSNBC? You know, they're always in there.
I've heard that argument. A friend of mine was making that case. It's the same thing. It's not the same thing.
I don't think it's the same. You turn on MSNBC.
It's not the same.
They certainly have a liberal slant, but they have, like, John Meacham, the presidential historian. They'll have Bob Woodward. They'll have New York Times reporters, PBS reporters. They have qualified journalists on there all the time who give accurate, factually based perspectives on what's going on in the news.
Well, would you say that it's possible that the Democrats' decision in part is a business decision, a financial decision? Not only they don't want to give the Fox the ability to run the primary, but also they don't want to give them the ratings,
they don't want to enhance the Fox brand because the brand has been tainted by the right-wing ideologues of Hannity and so on.
I think that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
It might make it look balanced.
Yeah, that's right. It might lead people, although the Fox audience believes that it's balanced. And so how do you reach those people who have no other news source? And a lot of people, and Fox is a very, very old audience. It's the oldest of the networks, but it's also the biggest news audience.
Does Murdoch still own Fox?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So Murdoch owns the New York Post. Murdoch owns Fox.
The Wall Street Journal.
Okay. And one of the things that is so interesting is that in the case of the Post, he loses a lot of money.
Yeah.
So he's willing to lose money in order to make his philosophical point.
But with Fox, he's actually opposed to the Trump administration's immigration policy. He differs with Trump on other things. But according to this article by Jane Mayer, and she quotes other people who are close to Murdoch, he really wants this access to the president. He can get access to the president anytime.
And with the Post.
And he can manipulate it. And he's ready. He's making $2.1 billion a year. That kind of trumps, pardon the verb, that kind of trumps his own philosophy getting promulgated.
Yeah. The president claims, of course, you never know when Donald Trump says something if it's true, but he claims that he talks to Murdoch every day. He has said that to Ann Coulter. And when Ann Coulter was briefly put off Fox, Donald Trump said to her, "You want me to get you back on? I'll call Rupert." And within 12 hours, she was back on the air on Fox. I don't know what happened. Jane Mayer quotes Ann Coulter as speculating that the president actually called Hannity and got her back on. But one way or another.
Yeah. Mm. Well, in finality, the end of her article, Jane Mayer's great article in The New Yorker, she quotes somebody who observes that, ordinarily when the Mueller probe is actually over and the report comes out, the kinds of things that we're anticipating will come out would take down a president, any president. But with Fox carrying the alternative point of view that it was all a Democrat attack to undo the election, that's likely not to happen. And it's going to be the way that he wages his attack against the Mueller report.
And speaking of what other people have to say, the scariest thing I heard last week was the Cohn utterance when he was on that there would not be a peaceful transition of power, and that's why he came forward. And, of course, we may have substantive difficulties with it, but if it did, the question would be, how would that affect the press, and what would the role of the press be? Because at that point of the game, you've got dictatorship.
I think that was some hyperbole.
Yeah, it could be.
Anything can happen. I will grant you that.
Well, especially with this friend.
We now know that.
But I would hope not that. And I would think that there's more immediate things that we, as members of the media, would need to be worrying about and concentrating on than the transition of power.
Well, I want to argue that with you, if you don't mind, Barbara,
sure.
Because I truly think there is nothing more important in the American Republican democracy than the peaceful transference of power and all that goes with it. Because the moment you lose that, you got a dictator. And once you have that, then you may as well kiss the press goodbye and everything else, because it'll do that. Now, is there anybody in this room or anywhere else who thinks that if Trump thinks he'll be indicted, that he won't take a step that most of us have considered unthinkable, like you, Barbara?
He may well. And that actually raises the concern that with this audience of Trump that is fed a different diet, that would see, I'm sure that Fox would present Trump holding onto power as being a step against anarchy or something like that. You know, yeah, it would be outrageous.
Yeah. And going back to the question about should the Democrats have a primary on the Fox network, I try to ask myself, what is the purpose? What is the goal of doing that? The audience that would be watching it on Fox, they're not going to be Democrat voters, but anybody could tune in to hear it. They want to find the weak link among the Democrats and support. Yeah. They want to tear the Democrats apart and have whoever's going to be easiest for Trump to beat.
The polls are showing that people watch Fox all the time. So if they're not, the Democrats don't make the debates available to Fox, then they probably will let Fox cut up what's on the other stations and it will be pejorative. If the whole unedited debate is there, at least the Fox audience might actually see somebody is not unreasonable and may have points that are reasonable.
That's an excellent argument for having Fox show that. Thanks.
There you go. Okay, from your lips to Tom Perez's ears. How about that? Listen to this. Here's a troubling statistic from the Columbia Journalism Review. Published a poll saying that 60% of people believe that reporters get paid by their sources, either sometimes or very often. 60% believe that. And I just have to assert here, and maybe some of our listeners believe this too, no reputable news organization gets paid by its news sources. Yet, you know, here you have more than half the people believing that. What do you do about that? What do you do when 60% of the people believe that there is that level of corruption in journalism? I'm just very troubled by that.
I was too. I was very troubled by it, even though a lot of journalists are barely paid by their employers. So
yeah,
it's... I think the article had talked about trying to find the reasons that people would believe this. But even after reading that, I still wasn't clear. You don't want to have a disclaimer after each story. It's a perception. Yeah.
Nobody was paid for this article.
Right.
Right. How odd is that? And one of the things that I've always found interesting is that these public opinion polls always show that the one place where people still trust journalists are their local TV anchors. Isn't that odd? But it's because they see these people.
They're
in
their living room.
It's a personal connection.
Personal relationship with them. And the other thing is that TV markets itself better than other, you know, fair and balanced, trusted and all that kind of stuff. So we probably need to do more of that kind of thing.
Transparency. That's the answer.
Transparency can help, although seeing how the sausage is made...
Could be. Could turn some people off.
Yeah. You just hope that the sausage turns out tasty in any case. All right. Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about the president cursing on the air and what do you do.
No.
Quickly, Alan, what do you think about the president saying?
Wash his mouth out with soap.
Well, there you go. Thank you. That's an old-fashioned
concept.
Yes,
I think we should not use his words in full. I'm very worried about normalizing that type of language in our media. And if they are going to do it for him, that means everyone else can speak that way. So don't get sucked into letting him drag us down.
All right. So that would be the last word for the Media Project.
No, my last word is I disagree with Barbara.
Well,
but for another program, we'll hear.
Put it for another program.
Let people hear what a loudie is.
I will be recovered from my cold next week. This is my effort to sound like Ray Graff, you know. All right. That's enough.
Makes you sound better.
Alan Chartok, Barbara Lombardo, Mike Spain, and Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, columnist, commentator, and author. Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. And Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org. or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Represent the common people.
it's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.